In this week's Business Spotlight, the Erie Regional Chamber and Growth Partnership is proud to showcase members that have met the challenge of the COVID-19 pandemic head-on and are poised to succeed when Erie fully reopens. We'll take a look back on the fear and challenges that members initially felt, how they overcame the COVID-19 challenges, and now, how they are poised to win in a post-COVID-19 environment. First is Tom New, President and CEO at WQLN Public Media. Tom, thanks so much for joining us. Can you walk us through how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected the way WQLN does business?
Well, probably the big thing that we got hit with when the pandemic hit was that we had to start canceling a lot of our events and bus trips. We canceled our Brew Festival, which is a big fundraiser for WQLN. We canceled the bike ride that's attached to the Brew Festival. We had to cancel our auction, our on-air auction, because we had to figure out a way of doing that auction so that we could do it in a safe manner. So the auction wasn't canceled so much as it was moved to the end of June. All of our bus trips, and we had a lot of them. We had bus trips going to New York. We had bus trips going to Mackinac Island way up in Michigan. We had a lot of bus trips that were going to shows in Cleveland and Pittsburgh, and those were all canceled. It was a significant hit for the station, but it allowed us to focus on, you know, our core business, which is broadcasting.
What are the most critical problems you have had to overcome as an organization as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic?
Probably if there was a problem, I mean, I think that here at WQLN, what we've realized during the closure were a lot of opportunities. But as a problem for running a business, when you go to work on a typical day, you know, you meet people, you talk to people face to face, you find out about their kids and their grandkids, you know, you share lunch in a break room, you have coffee together. There's a communication process that goes on in a normal day-to-day life that you can't recreate during Zoom meetings. And that was the one thing that I think that WQLN and many companies struggled with. What we tried to do to overcome that is I would have daily meetings with the vice president of WQLN, and three times a week I would have meetings with the senior leadership team, the directors and the vice president. Every week I would have a meeting with all of those people and our managers, and then once a week we did a WQLN happy hour, and that was with the entire staff. And we did not talk about work at any of those happy hours. We talked about kids. We talked about, we talked about how people were getting along during the pandemic. We were, almost touching just to have that normal office, almost friend-to-friend, colleague-to-colleague communication about how you're getting along. We talked about gardening and birthdays and pets. Now, if I could switch to some of the opportunities that we discovered, because they really came at WQLN right away. The first opportunity is we spent our first week in quarantine connecting with all of the school districts that are in Northwest Pennsylvania. And we reached out to all of those school districts, and we were then connected to school teachers. And what we did is we came up with a simple and safe way that teachers could go on television on our main channel and they could conduct classes, because what we saw as a big problem in Northwest Pennsylvania is that the rural communities just have no connectivity. They don't have access to broadband. So every day from 8 in the morning until noon, we have teachers that go on for pre-K, K, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, and they conduct classes. And watching the teachers on television has been amazing, you know, understanding what their craft is. Some of the other things that we've been working on here at WQLN is to figure out ways of doing safe, community events. And we're going to be doing that with our, we're experimenting with it, with our Sounds Around Town. We'll be recording the concerts here on our campus, but we won't have anybody at the campus, but we'll broadcast those. And we'll put those on the air quicker than we typically would. And what we're hoping to do is we're hoping to broadcast the Blues and Jazz Festival in August in a way that through social media we can encourage people to put their television sets and their radios on their front porches or in their backyards so that they can share the Blues and Jazz Festival with other people around them. We'll be able to do a live event, but instead of doing it in one location in Frontier Park, we'll do it in thousands of locations all around the county so that we can still keep alive the Blues and Jazz Festival. The broadcast of that event will include all of the striking down the bands and setting up the bands with maybe some additional people doing other single performances. And we will produce all of that here at WQLN.
It sounds like you have a great team at WQLN that makes all of this possible, right?
Oh, I think we absolutely do. And, everybody here is kind of like passionate about what they do. I mean, I think that that's an attribute for people that make their lives in public broadcasting. And so that's to them. But, you know, if there's during this entire pandemic, we've been hearing about the helpers. And it's obvious who those helpers are. It's the kids that stock the shelves. It's, you know, it's the people that are still working the cash registers at stores, grocery stores, and around our community. Of course, it's also the folks that drive the ambulances and work in the hospitals. But there's one subsection of our community that really hasn't, I think, received the recognition that they need to receive. And these are all the IT people, all the computer folks that make sure that companies like yours and mine are able to leave our building for 8 weeks, continue our work at home almost seamlessly, right? I mean, because we didn't miss a single day of broadcast here at WQLN on any of our stations. Our engineering team is able to run all four of our TV stations and the radio station flawlessly from multiple locations around the county. But it's interesting to me that the one shout-out that I haven't heard during the whole pandemic are to these technical folks, these IT and computer people that had made this all possible.
What are the permanent changes that you will implement as an organization as a result of COVID-19, and what do you think the new normal looks like for WQLN in the future?
Well, I think that WQLN, because we're a broadcaster, we should look the way that we always look to everybody else, anybody that's ever tuned in to watch one of our four channels or listen to our radio station. So I think that for WQLN, from our members and our listeners and our viewers, there should be no difference. Internally in the building, I think that one of the things that we discovered through all of our remote Zoom meetings is that we've discovered a new way of communicating and working together, and it's almost been a training lesson on how to work better together. So I think that if there's any good news during this pandemic, I think that the staff at WQLN were listening more, paying closer attention to what other people are doing, and I think that we're working better together as a team.
Tom, thanks so much for your time. I know you're busy. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
And there's one thing that I could add that WQLN did while we were in quarantine is we were able to add programming to our radio schedule. We recognize that the pandemic will not last forever. One of these days, the pandemic will be over. But we're going to have to live with an economy that is going to be very complicated. So we added Marketplace. It's one of the best programs on the air to our radio schedule every day at 6 o'clock, and it's all about the economy in the U.S. That is followed up by a program by the editors of the New York Times called The Daily. And The Daily is a program that focuses on a single topic every single day, and that's going to be on every day at 6:30. And then between those programs, we added a little show. You'll remember I did a shout-out to all the tech folks and all the people that keep us in business. Well, it's called Marketplace Techs. And so if you're looking for the next big wow me electronic toy, you're going to find out about it on this 5-minute daily program.
Let's bring in our second guest today, Maria DeSanza, the co-owner of Luminary Distilling. Maria, thanks again for joining us. We'll jump right into it. Can you walk us through how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected the way Luminary Distilling does business?
So we've been open for about 3 years now, and our typical day has customers coming in, having the option to sample our spirits, trying one or two of our cocktails, and then purchasing bottles on their way out. We've really focused on communication and interaction with our customers. We like to think of ourselves as less of a bottle shop that you simply come and go from, but more of a unique experience where you can actually see the distilling process, you can hang out and talk about the work that goes into each bottle and the process of distilling with my husband and myself. Since COVID-19, it's really disrupted what we've been used to. We realized pretty quickly that our in-house drinks we're not able to do anymore for the time being, and that our bottle sales would have to pick up and take their place. The extended closing of the state stores brought us some new customers and businesses, and our most dramatic change these last few months was transitioning to liquid hand sanitizer production for both businesses and to the public. The federal government realized sanitizer would be in high demand and gave distillers across the U.S. the green light to make it, which is something relatively new. I don't think it's ever been done before. So that's kind of how that's changed.
I bet you never thought you would be in the hand sanitizer business.
No, not at all. I mean, that didn't even cross my mind. And what I've said to my husband before, too, is, you know, we've talked about opening up a distillery about 6-7 years ago, and I never thought that I would have that conversation with him. And then now, you know, going down the road, never thought that we would have the conversation of, hey, we're able to produce hand sanitizer. Let's look into this and see what we can do to help.
It really sounds like you saw a need and stepped up.
Yes. Yeah, and a lot of distilleries, you know, not in just Pennsylvania, but around the world have really stepped up. And it's something that we're all proud of, that we have the equipment to do it. And they're giving us this green light to go and do it, to help continue to help our community, so that it's neat to realize that, you know, we can produce something else that the community could use instead of just doing our spirits.
What is the single most critical problem you've had to overcome as an organization as a result of this COVID-19 pandemic?
So aside from ensuring that when our customers are coming into the tasting room to purchase bottles or cocktails to go, ensuring their health and safety, the biggest hurdle was in the very short time frame that we had was having to figure out how to produce the sanitizer, how to get the sanitizer approved by the FDA, having, finding the supplies and the bottles for the sanitizer. And we had to do this just like it rather quickly, just like any other business that had to stay open during this time, that, you know, you didn't get that much of a warning that things were going to be changing. So just trying to figure out that short period of time that, you know, this is what we're able to do, this is how you can do it, and then just trying to find the supplies, because now every distillery is looking into making sanitizer, so the supplies for the sanitizer are, you know, being depleted, as well as the bottles to put the sanitizer in. So just trying to figure out how we can switch gears to make everything work And just, you know, figuring out how to make everything work, and where we also needed to keep up with the increased demand for our spirits and continuing distilling and bottling so that we could have the spirits that we sell at both of our locations.
How has COVID-19 impacted your team at Luminary Distilling?
Yeah, so, we have great employees, and all of our employees have full-time jobs. So working at the distillery was just a part-time gig for them, just to make some extra money. And so with those full-time jobs that they have, they were still working. They weren't affected by the COVID-19 because we have some teachers on staff. We have technicians that work in the pharmacy. We have event managers and then office personnel. So they were still working their full-time job. And then our hours also had to switch. So before, we were more of a late afternoon into the evening establishment. So now our hours switch to where we're open mainly during the day, and we're closing by 6 o'clock. And our bar's not open, so our bartenders can't make the drinks. So it was my husband and myself, and we had a couple employees that would help us in the back, making the sanitation or the sanitizer, and then also trying to keep up with the spirits. So that was challenging because now that my husband and I had to kind of step up and do double time with everything in the back. And the sanitizer we were making was quickly going out the door to the essential businesses that were still being open during this time. So just trying to make sure that we stay on top of everything and that we have enough product, whether it be the sanitizer or the spirits, so that nothing is interrupted during the day-to-day business.
What are the permanent changes that you will implement as an organization as a result of COVID-19, and what do you think the new normal looks like for Luminary Distilling?
Well, we are going to have to probably reorganize our tasting room so that we meet the state and federal guidelines for the safety of our customers and our employees. Sanitation has always been practice, but we'll definitely have to significantly increase our efforts in that department with everything going on. And what's nice is with our distiller's license, we were always able to provide cocktails to go. So not only can we sell our bottles to go out the door, we could also do cocktails to go. So now we've realized that we didn't do that before because there wasn't that need or that demand, but now we can kind of switch things up a little bit, and we can offer that service where now we're, maybe pushing more of the cocktails to go, doing, cocktails in a bottle or cocktails in a can, instead of having that experience where you come in and have the cocktails in-house. We'll still do that, but now we might have to be limited onto how many people we're able to have in our tasting room. So it's just, looking at different avenues, continuing our curbside pickup, orders to go. We do delivery. We're allowed to deliver our spirits to our customers. So just kind of looking at that aspect and seeing how can we, add this into our business plan and how can we improve this, just in case that, our tasting room is not going to be, what we were used to. So just kind of looking at a different game plan and going from there.
Maria, thanks again for joining us. Let's move on to our third and final guest, Jennifer Reed, the co-owner at Relish Studio and Gallery. Jennifer, we'll jump right into it. Can you walk us through how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected the way Relish does business?
Well, sure. When I take my yearly revenue and break it down, 70, almost 80% of my business is walk-in traffic. So right away, shutting the doors and shuttering the business was a huge hit. And not only that, the next biggest percentage is my outdoor shows or my out-of-store shows. And in fact, in March, I had just landed in L.A. to do a show in Cayucas, California, which is Central Coast, and it's one of our biggest shows. It's a great revenue stream for us. And when I landed, and not even at our final destination, I got word that the show was canceled. And that was devastating because I had just ramped up my inventory, spent a bunch of money, you know, flying and renting and shipping out my parts and pieces to put the show on. And then that was shut down. So they took that, one of my biggest shows of the year, off the plate. And then followed up by my online sales. And of course, online was always still running. But now we had to do it in a different way. So we came home, and the biggest thing is probably just, like I said, shutting the doors and coming home and not really knowing what was going to happen. Like, I think at first everybody thought, oh, this is going to be a couple weeks, or it was like the May 8th or the end of April or even Easter, as we had been told. Just on the fly adjusting and still not having, I mean, still to this day, not having all the answers to run our businesses the way we need to.
Jennifer, what is the single most critical problem you've had to overcome as an organization as a result of this COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, the cash flow, quite frankly, and it sounds, you know, simple and most obvious. But when there's no cash coming in, it's hard to then have the cash going out. So my immediate reaction was to shut down all expenses, call my mortgage holder, call all my advertisers, all the new product that I was bringing into the store, because I not only do I make my own product, which is, you know, mostly what I sell, but I'm also a gift gallery, and I focus on American-made handmade one-of-a-kind gifts, and I had to call all those people and cancel the orders because if there wasn't any money coming in, I just didn't know where the cash flow was coming from, and telling my employees, we're shutting down, you're going to be laid off, go file for unemployment. We didn't know what was happening. And working with all my creditors, you know, saying, hey, I know I owe you money, but I can't make that cash flow happen right now because it's just not coming in. So those were really critical. And to act quickly, like I said, I didn't, you know, at first I thought, oh, it's going to be a couple weeks. But as my husband and I were talking about this, we're like, we better make some adjustments right away. And we did it in our personal lives as well, you know, cancel the TV, the cable, anything extraneous, because you had to tighten your belt. We didn't know what was coming. He's a small business owner as well.
Did you do anything with your online sales to help mitigate the damage here?
No, actually we did. And that's a great question, because in my line of work, it's so difficult to put everything that I create on the web because they're one of a kind. So imagine I make a custom necklace and it's a couple hundred dollars. And then now I would have all that inventory that I made for Cayucas, in fact, I take it out there, but it didn't sell because there was no show. So we brought it back home and made the decision to take photographs, because we were closed and now I had the time, take the photographs, edit them, and then put them up. And that's a lot of work for a one-time sale. Like, it's not widgets, so there's not 15 or 20 or 100 of them. There's one, and I have one chance to make some money. And if I'm spending 3 hours on editing and you know, putting it on line, it's not always cost-effective for me to do that. But in this case, now I found myself having a lot of extra time, and there was no way else to put my things in front of my customers. So we shot probably 300 pieces of jewelry I did a number of Facebook Lives saying that this collection would have never been seen by the general public. It would have only been offered in California and likely not to have returned, having been sold out there. So I, you know, got them up there. And that was, you know, it was kind of eye-opening to me because it's always been a sticking point with my product. How do I put something up there? Usually I would try and put something up that I could reproduce a number of times. And I have disclaimers saying all the glass is unique. It's going to be similar in shape and size, but not exact. And you will not be getting what's shown. Well, now it's the WYSIWYG. You know, what you see is what you get. And it went over really well. It's better than I thought, actually. And that helped because there was a lot of people that felt for my business and, you know, like my product, which I'm lucky to have the 24 years history in the business. So they were looking to help support me and keep me in business. So that was a big eye-opener, like, well, this worked, and I won't always have the time to do that, but it worked this time. So it was a good reaction to what was going on.
Can you share what your website is and how to get in contact with you?
Absolutely. It's www.relishinc.com. That's RELISHINC.com. And there's a number of different buttons or navigation clicks on the site. The ones that are the Cayucas collection is custom jewelry at the top. Spring earrings is new. And going forward, I may adjust all of my offerings online to just be what you see is what you get. Like, make something, take a picture of it, and put it up there instead of people having to order something and then me make it, because that's another slowdown process.
Jennifer, thanks again for joining us. We know it's a crazy time. Last question. What are the permanent changes that you will implement as an organization as a result of COVID-19? And what do you think the new normal looks like for Relish?
Well, of course, all the safety things in place. It's the new normal for now, and we don't know how long that's going to be in effect for. So the required face masks, social distancing, the face shield, the hand sanitizer all around the showroom, the wiping down of doorknobs and, you know, all common surfaces that a customer or a pens, you know, those kinds of things will come in place. But I've reduced my showroom hours because I haven't called back my employees yet. I don't know what the future brings, especially for things like mine, you know, not really essential. It's not like we're selling food or necessary things. It's all elective purchasing. And having those showroom hours because I can't man them all, make my product, do all the administrative things, and get it all online, you know, for one person is really a lot. So I haven't, you know, called my people back. Watching my budgets more closely, really shutting down on a lot of my advertising, unfortunately, because, again, we don't know what the future brings. And, in fact, we're going to be doing a virtual show. That's going to be a new avenue that we've never done before, coming up on June 20th for Beachcombing Magazine. And a number of sea glass artists from across the country are going to be doing a live show. And we'll see how that goes. We just have to make these adjustments and keep pushing the web presence and see what happens. I'm hoping that, you know, I don't know what the travel industry is, of course, going to do, but maybe it's going to increase. I am a tourist destination, a tourist-based business. And if these folks come in from Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Buffalo, because they're not taking the big flights and they're not going to these exotic places because they're just unsure of the status of, you know, the health travel, maybe it'll increase. I just don't know, but those are the things we're going to work on.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Join us again next week as Logistics Plus is in the Business Spotlight.